your new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.
Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you, this is your first time, we welcome you as well. Today's show is a continuation of last week's show that we did on Pearson and Spygate. We call this one Pearson Spygate 2, and we're going to sort of like catch up on what has taken place over the past 7 days relating to the revelations about Pearson and its spy activity. And we have with us Bob Brohm, who broke the story nine days ago, and who was on our show last Sunday to give us a firsthand account of what was going on. And then we also have Mr. Ken. Ken, I'm going to mess up your last name. I say Pervetti, and he tells me my Italian is wrong, but we'll let him clarify that. And so, let us get right to it. Bob, why don't you come in and give a brief little intro as to yourself and the big news that has taken place since you were here last week.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Miller. Yeah, my name is Bob Brohm. I am a publisher of Bob Brohm's Ledger, publisher and only employee, which is a blog about education. I was with the Star Ledger, the state's largest newspaper, for 50 years before I retired and started taking up the blog. Last week, we talked about how we discovered that Pearson was spying on social media to determine, in their words, to make sure there were no security breaches on their test. Since that time, there has been a hearing in the New Jersey legislature, which revealed some other things. It's hard to say that it revealed it. The commissioner refused to show up. I think it was an act of cowardice, but he refused to show up to talk about it. He sent some underlings who really didn't know what they were talking about. But it came out that they were spying not simply on Facebook and Twitter, but apparently also on group text messages. Now, we haven't been able to determine what that means, because it seems unlikely that they would be able to actually get telephone messages. But we do think it's the service that Google offers to school districts to keep their students close to what's going on in their schools. And apparently they were watching that to determine whether anybody was doing any saying inappropriate things about the PARC tests. We also, the state also contended that if Pearson claimed intellectual property rights, that they could conceivably persuade Google Twitter and Facebook to hand over background information on the students who were using it. The problem is, of course, that many students who use Twitter and Facebook use pseudonyms, and it's impossible for any normal person to figure out who is behind a pseudonym. But according to Patricia Morgan, who is a legal analyst for the Department of Education in New Jersey, who was sent to talk to the legislature, If they claim a violation of property rights, then they can conceivably find out who was doing it. Pearson can, and find out their names. Now, the problem with that argument is that under the contract that Pearson has with the state's running park, which is park is a coalition, a partnership of 12 states in the District of Columbia, the problem with that is that the states own the questions, not Pearson. So if it indeed invokes intellectual property rights, then it's apparently lying, which would not surprise me. We also found out, or there was news, I suppose, from Park that they had directed Pearson not to use student databases that each of the states had produced to find out who the students were who were writing about Park on their Twitter or Facebook or Google or whatever. The problem with that is we didn't know that they were using student databases to find out. And what we have to think about here is that in New Jersey, and I'm sure in other states as well, Pearson runs something called PowerSchool, which is a locally run database that many, many districts in New Jersey, the majority of districts in New Jersey use. That is linked to something called NJSmart, which is a statewide database which assigns every teacher and every school employee a number. And if you know that number and you have access to New Jersey Smart, you can find out things about those teachers and those students. Finally, another story that we broke was that the chief testing officer for New Jersey, a woman named Barry Ehrlichson, who also did not show up to talk to the legislators, is married to an Andrew Ehrlichson, who was vice president of a company called MongoDB, DB standing for database, Mongo standing for humongous, but it's a $1.8 billion corporation, which has a subcontracts with Pearson. So the fiscal health of Pearson is very important to the fiscal health of MongoDB, and of course to MongoDB's employees, including this vice president, who is married to the chief testing officer. Now, whether that's a conflict of interest or not is a judgment that others have to make, but what I think it shows is that there are ties, personal profit ties from people in New Jersey, and I'm sure other states that are using the Park test, and this enormous multi-billion-dollar multinational corporation that we know as Pearson, which not only provides these tests but provides textbooks, provides pictures, provides local databases for school districts, pictures of children. It's an enormous corporation, and like most enormous multinational corporations, it is without public accountability. So I think that's pretty much a summary of what's happened in the last week. If you have any other questions, we'd like to try to answer them.
I do. I have a question myself, and then a caller from the Northeast posed a question that I want to get to you. Her question is, she would love to see somehow how you could pierce together all the pieces, Pearson, PowerSchool, and Google, to see whether or not there is a connection, collusion, and what it would mean, basically.
Well, I'm glad the caller brought up that question, because Google, of course, provides the Chromebooks, which are now being used in New Jersey and other states to give the test. I don't know what the nature of the collusion would be if there's in fact collusion, but clearly they are all, if I was in kind, I would say they're all involved in this parasitical relationship with the public schools, in that they are selling goods, selling data, selling software, selling all manner of things to an institution, public education, that was once locally based. And I, you know, I've been writing about education long enough to remember when there were complaints about it going from locally based to state based, but now it's federally based. And I don't want to sound like a Tea Party person because I'm not, but clearly the federalization of public education has led to this profit field out there available to these giant multinational corporations. And in their search and their crusade or campaign to keep their questions secure or to keep testing secure, they then create their own sort of shadow surveillance government. I mean, it's bad enough that we're, you know, our conversations are surveilled by the NSA, but now we have private corporations who are looking at what our children are doing. That's pretty scary for a lot of reasons.
Well, that was the broad question that I was going to pose to you in terms of, in your opinion, based on what you know so far, where does this leave us in terms of, are we really at a Big Brother stage or state in our public schools? I'm assuming they probably may be doing this in private schools as well. And I think I said this last week, that we already know that students give up a lot of their rights the minute they step on school property. The right to privacy, the right to free speech, and on, and now they're losing their rights in their homes or out away from school by using their social media or technology, exposing their views, their intended behavior, and et cetera, so that outside authorities can monitor and then seem to take action. So where are we in your view?
Well, I'd like to pose this question. I mean, Pearson has an answered question to make about statements from time to time, but they won't make people available for interviews. But here's a question that I wonder about. What if somebody in a social media situation was talking about something about testing, but also mentioned on a Facebook posting or in a Google group texting program that he was about to commit suicide? Would then that kind of information be transmitted, and what are the issues involved in that? I mean, we know from the New Jersey experience that Pearson called the State Department of Education on a priority one alert. As it turned out, it wasn't true, that a student had taken a picture of a question and had posted it online. That Department of Education then called up the local district superintendent, a woman named Elizabeth Stewart at Watchung Hills Regional, and insisted not simply that they investigate, but that they also call in the student and punish that student. And she, of course, said, you know, that she was disturbed by this whole thing. But I got to wonder, if they can justify this, why not justify, you know, preventing crime, preventing suicide, preventing bullying? And there are people out there, I'm sure, who would say, well, of course, you have to, you know, do what you can to prevent that sort of thing. So it opens up this extraordinary new Pandora's box for what these corporations can do. And, you know, what they couldn't answer at the hearing the other day, for example, is, you know, they're only looking for discussions and chatter, you know, in the we've heard CIA chatter. They're only looking for chatter about tests and everything else. But when they plug into these social media postings, they also will pick up other things. They will pick up, you know, maybe private confessions about wrongdoing or things like that. Are we ready now? And why not? I mean, let's say for a moment Pearson did pick up a child who said he couldn't stand the PARC test. It was just the last straw, and now he was going to commit suicide. does that corporation now have the responsibility to alert state and local officials to prevent a child suicide? And by the way, there was just a child suicide in Newark on last week, a seventh grader. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility. But then we have to wonder, you know, what in the world are we doing? Are we creating this brave new world of constant monitoring simply because we can? And I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's anybody willing to answer those questions. There certainly wasn't anybody willing in the New Jersey legislature. I mean, one legislator said that he would introduce a bill to regulate, but I don't know what that means, to regulate monitoring of students.
Well, maybe we can get an answer. Maybe we can get an answer to that because our third guest is here now. I apparently have given network the wrong telephone number, and there is a firing squad standing outside waiting for me after the show. So let's bring our third guest in.
Hello.
Hi. I am so sorry. They tell me that I gave you the wrong gave them the wrong number, and they've been trying to call you, and I have messed up.
That's okay. So, I'm here now.
I apologize. Do me a favor and introduce yourself, because I'm having problems wondering whether or not I'm pronouncing your first name correctly.
My name is Lane, and I'm the executive director of Classified Matters, and I'm the co-chair of the Parent Coalition to Protect Privacy. And so we, of course, were concerned about the stories about Pearson monitoring student behavior. I'm hardly surprised at the fact that they're doing this because, you know, the tests are being given now over several different weeks across the entire country. And they are desperate to try to keep the question secret. They plan never to release the entire test, which I think is totally unacceptable. But here in New York, where I'm located, we've had several years of Pearson exams that have been full of errors, bad questions, unacceptably ambiguous reading passages and questions that and tests that are developmentally inappropriate for the age levels in which they have been given, and far too long in many cases. And we exposed the questions, the pineapple questions on the Pearson exam in 2012 on our blog first, which was written about and became viral nationwide. And that was the questions about an absurd race between a pineapple and a hare, with questions that were just absurd. And what we first found out about it from a posting on our blog, the New York City Parent blog. And then I did a little research, and I found out that the same passage and questions had been given in at least six different states over the last 7 years. And every single time it had been given, students were really upset at the questions because they made no sense and put them off. And parents and teachers and students had talked to them on blogs and through social media, and it even had its own Facebook page. And yet Pearson had the nerve to say that they'd never heard any complaints about this question before. So we know that Pearson wants to obscure as much as possible not just the content of the questions, but the low quality of the questions that they are apt to give over and over and over again and make huge profits from. But in this case, it's really, you know, it's a suppression of free speech to stop having kids to talk about these questions, as they are obviously liable to do. And if they're upset about the, you know, the ambiguous nature of them or the low quality, they should be able to talk about them. But because this test is being given nationwide over many, many different weeks, Pearson feels like they have to clamp down. And I just think that whole process is very unrealistic. We should have never had a nationwide test in the first place. If it's going to be given, it can't be given over many different weeks so that you feel that you can suppress speech. And most importantly of all, it has to be fully revealed in every single question given, or else we will never know exactly what the quality of the test is, or the low quality, as the case may be. I just think the entire process has been flawed from the beginning. The reason we're having these national tests now is because of Race to the Top, which was a program devised by Arne Duncan and pushed by the Gates Foundation and others. And Joanne Weiss, who was his chief of staff at the time and in charge of the Race to the Top program at the time, wrote an article for Harvard Business Week Review saying, once we nationalize the tests and the standards and the curriculum, this is going to be a great advantage for curriculum and testing companies, because instead of marketing their products to each individual state as they had to have done previously, they could benefit from a nationwide market all at once, and that would lead to great efficiencies, but also much greater profits for the testing and curriculum companies. And we also found in New York State that many of the reading passages on our Pearson produced tests were the same as reading passages on some of their textbooks, which some kids in the state got access to in advance and others did not, which is also obviously unfair. But if you're going to have Pearson-produced tests, then obviously there's going to be a great incentive on the part of districts to buy Pearson reading textbooks and curriculum in order to test prep for the test. So it all goes together, and it's a great opportunity for the testing companies, but not such a great opportunity for kids.
This is Bob Braun. I'm going to have to leave the conversation, but I'm so pleased to have spent a few minutes with Ms. Hansen, who is one of my heroes. So thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, you're one of my heroes, Bob. I've never met you, but I've your reporting is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
And this is Ken Previty, and Bob, you're my hero, too.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, Ken, come on in. You've been waiting patiently.
Yeah, I'd like to say hello to Leonie. I only met you once very briefly at the NPE conference last year. But speaking of heroes, you're one of mine. So one of the things and by the way, it's Ken Previty. My blog is Reclaim Reform. I'm simply a retired teacher who blogs, and I do what I can to help the cause. But one of the things because you came in a little late about it, is the fact that Bob was talking about the idea of collecting even more information on students and using that, because information's a lot of money, okay? And then you were talking about, is this a national situation that's getting bigger and bigger, and including these multinational corporations for profit? And I don't know if you read the Politico.com article that I believe was just yesterday.
Yes, it was.
And it's talking about the data privacy bill. So in addition to being able to release, to say, oh, we're watching to see whenever our things are used, versus
Ken, you're coming
a
in
child's
and out.
Rights.
I can't hear you that well. I'm not sure whether it's just me or the entire radio show, but the volume is very erratic.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me on here, Jim?
I hear you fine.
Okay. Leonie, okay. Do you have your radio on behind you?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I'm just listening to
Well, I'll
phone.
I'll try to talk a little more clearly then, or slowly. The data privacy bill that's going before Congress, and I'm going to quote, the pledge doesn't require companies to get parental consent or even to give parents advance notice before collecting intimate information on their children's academic progress and their learning styles. It also explicitly allows companies to build personal profiles of children to help them develop or improve their ed tech products. Now, they can't sell those profiles, but, and it goes on from there, and the but is what it's all about. So what you're saying about the idea of, does this mean, is there this huge governmental approved carte blanche that's being given to a multinational corporation? The answer is yes, and I think it includes even more than they are very bad questions, no question about it. And the it's going so far right now that I know I must sound like a Tea Party fanatic. I am not, okay, at all. But this is beyond my wildest imagination, and yet it's become a reality.
I have a couple things that I want to say that dovetails into what you said and what you said earlier, Leonie. But we have two callers, and one has been waiting almost the entire show. I want to get to her first and get her question in, and then the other lady, and then I'll come back and revive where we are right now. Let's bring in one of the callers, please. Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hi. Who am I speaking to?
Rosanna. How
okay.
are you? Are
I'm
you
okay.
having trouble
messing
hearing
messing
me
up?
Or can you hear me?
No, we're fine.
Okay. Okay.
You
so
have a question.
I'm a music teacher, and all of these, this is a fantastic show, and last week's show was also a fantastic show. And I just want to know, besides becoming involved and advocating and protesting and doing all these things that I'm doing, what more can I do? Because all of this testing, the park, the Common Core, the race to the top, it's just a huge Ponzi scheme for these privateers. And they're not dedicated to kids. They're dedicated to their bottom line. And, you know, brilliant people like you know that, but a lot of people don't. And parents are finally acting out. Well, what can we do as teachers, you know, to make it known?
Lonnie, you want to try take that?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of good organizations out there. There's a National Opt-Out. There's a Network for Public Education, which I'm on the board of, which Diane Ravitch started. We also have a coalition to protect student privacy at the website studentmatters.org, studentprivacymatters.org. I think you should, you know, look at some of these organizations, join up, and start advocating for your students, both locally, at the state level, and nationally. We're going to be doing a petition at studentprivacymatters.org to try to get a good student privacy bill introduced in Congress. Ken is right that the bill that's going to be introduced tomorrow in the House by Representatives Tolis and Messer really represents the interests of private vendors and not children, and allows them to build learning profiles, to advertise, to improve their products, and to share personal student information with a whole variety of additional third parties without any real restriction or requiring parent consent. And so I think that we need protections on student data, and we really need to stop this whole corporate reform agenda that's being pushed from above at the national, state, and local levels. And really the only way to do that is to become politically involved. And as a teacher, I don't know what state you teach in, but you certainly can make it known to parents and to students, not necessarily to encourage them to opt out, because you can get into trouble for that. But if they ask
one of ours did
about the testing, you know, to make it known how you feel, and to get involved with your union as well, if you come from a union state, to push your union to be more aggressive on the issues of testing. Because right now, some of the union chapters are against the testing, others are not. Some of them are against the Common Core, others are not. We believe that the Common Core, the testing, and the data, the violations of student privacy, all really go together. And they're all aimed at this future agenda for education that it's, that Bill Gates and others want, is essentially to be mechanized and depersonalized, and to outsource to computers and software rather than have instruction via your personal relationship with your teacher. And, you know, we believe Bill Gates has actually said on the record that the reason for the Common Core is to have a common plug that all students can be plugged into, essentially, and that the software can get plugged into. And then they can take the data and then use the data in order to further refine the software and the instructional product. So it all goes together. It's a very dehumanizing Orwellian vision of education. And I think that the most important thing can be done is to get politically involved.
Absolutely. Okay, Thank you so much. I don't know how it's legal.
Okay, I'd like to end it, if you don't mind. There are two things you could do immediately and without any risk of, you know, your job, and that's an important thing. There is a call both from MoveOn.org and from the Badass Teachers Association. You can go online and do it. And that's to have a Department of Justice investigation into what Pearson is doing. Because you simply cannot say no laws were broken, which is all over the news right now, until you actually have an investigation for it. And then United opt-out, with Seresta Smith thought of this, by the way. She says, sign civil rights complaints individually. Was your student stopped from leaving school? Were you stopped from picking your child up? What was happening? Were they being punished because of your decision? And that's a civil rights complaint. One civil rights complaint is an aggravation to a school board. 100 is a major issue that would demand resolution. So those are two things you can find online, you can do yourself, and you can, needless to say, encourage others to do as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I do get involved with Badass Teachers, and I sign every petition I see. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. Well, they've sort of like taken all of the suggestions that I was going to offer, but I will offer this. Starting next week, we're going to do maybe 4, 5, 6 shows back-to-back-to-back, starting with the Common Core, its history, its political history, philosophical history, coming out of the 1930s all the way up to where we are today. We're going to follow that up with a little bit more on testing, and then from there, going to go into opt-out and many of the anti-Common Core resistance movement to try and give a very in-depth, comprehensive overview of both the inside and the outside of what is going on in terms of Common Core is outside attack and the high state testing inside attack, and then the various groups who are trying to mount a resistance and an assessment of that resistance. So that'll take us at least 4, if not 5 weeks that are coming up. Okay, with that, we have another caller that I'd like to bring in, and I want to thank you, Susan, for calling in, and I hope we answered your question. Are you still there, Susan? Okay. Can we have our next caller, please?
Hi, I'm sorry I lost you. But I heard most of it.
Okay, I thought it was me for a moment.
I can't thank you enough for your suggestion. No, it was me.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I'm definitely going to stay involved as best I can.
Good. Well, continue to listen to the show. We still have some time left. So, but we thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Now, can we get the other caller in, please?
Hi, this is Deborah.
Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
How are you?
Great show today.
I'm okay. Yes. I was just talking about you. That
great.
This person is Dr. Deborah Owens, Duncan Owens, and she is going to be on next week and possibly the two following weeks, because I'm using her new book as a basis for my 5-part series on Common Core, the high stakes testing, and the resistance movement.
And before you go any further, her new book that just came out this year, January, is The Origins of the Common Core, How the Free Market Became Public Education Policy. I'm biased, but it's the very best book I've ever seen on Common Core. And that's why I decided to devote at least three shows to it. Okay,
you
have a couple of questions. So what's your first one?
Well, my first question is this, and I understand the rewriting of the FERPA laws and how students check their rights when they enter into a public school. But it seems to me that what Pearson is doing and other companies is entering into a contract with minors who actually have no legal standing to sign a contract without their parents' consent. And I was wondering, at what point are parents made aware of the absolute lack of rights that children have when they enter into a school?
Well, if
you've heard me say,
you know, we fought against. Yeah, this is Leonie. We were shocked when we found out about InBloom, which was this gigantic data monitoring system that was in 9 states and was going to collect and systematize and then share the personal data of public school students, millions and millions of public students. School students across the country, and we managed to stop that. But when we found out essentially that FERPA gave parents no right to control the disclosure of their children's data because it had been rewritten twice in 2008 and 2011 to essentially take away those rights, we were shocked. And when we went to the State Education Department in New York, basically the State Education Department said, when parents enroll their child in a public school, they lose all rights to control their data. And essentially, that's where we are right now. Now, it's true that children cannot sign contracts. So if they are signing a non-disclosure contract when they take a test, whether it's a Park-Pearson test or another standardized test, they cannot be legally held to that promise. However, schools can create their own disciplinary policies and have a pretty free hand in deciding how they want to discipline kids dependent on what they do and say. And so, you know, kids have very few rights in that area as it stands. But if there's going to be national testing and national policy on disclosure of data, there has to be a national policy on protecting student privacy as well and how that data is used. And that's why we believe it's really, really important to go to Congress and strengthen student privacy law through FERPA once again, because schools are now being essentially taken over by private companies. They are signing agreements and signing up vendors to do all sorts of things and giving away that data very freely without parents even being notified about it. And it is going to lead to real disaster and damage to millions of students unless we put a stop to it now. I think the whole issue of Park and Pearson is very confusing because, as Bob Braun wrote about, it's not clear what the distinction is between the state and Park and Pearson. And essentially, the state has outsourced their testing function to a private company, which is then monitoring students and then deciding, you know, on behalf of states how students should be disciplined, which is simply unacceptable. So parents in most of the country still have locally elected school boards. I think they need to go to their school boards and protest as well and say, what's happening here? Who is in control of our children's education? Is it a private testing company or is it the locally elected school board and the superintendent? And you owe it to us, re-elect you, you owe it to us to put some kind of controls on the disclosure of student data and some kind of controls over the monitoring of our children.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That brings me to my other point. This reminds me of the issue of wiretapping. When judges judge, when somebody wants to wiretap someone, they have to go to a judge, and they have to get approval. And then the judge sets parameters about what can be taped or used as evidence of guilt. And that's not only with private telephone calls, but now with social media, a judge adjudicates that issue. And I think the thing about our children is that they have no safeguards, that somebody can access their social media, and there's no gateway to say, you can't look at that, you can't have that, you can't use that as a way to communicate with their school boards or school districts and have those students sanctioned. And that's the, and another point that I want to make is that when teachers apply for their license, or even my student teachers, I teach at a college in New York, when my students are going to go into the field and be around students, they have to get fingerprinted, have background checks, and drug tests. Who's accessing the student data? And how do we know that they can be trusted with children's private information? And I think that's probably the most egregious thing about what we're finding out. And like you said, the reason why we must appeal to our legislators and say, if you want my vote, you have to protect my children.
Mm-hmm.
Ken?
Absolutely. We know that Pearson is hiring people off Craigslist to score the test.
I mean, it's just
scary if you think about it, and those people are getting access to kids' information through those tests. We know, we wrote about on our blog the fact that PARC has a very, very weak privacy policy. PARC, in its privacy policy, says we can use children's data in order to help states and districts decide which kids should be held back, how schools should be rated, how teachers should be rated, and also reserve the right to hand that data off to further contractors and subcontractors for a variety of reasons. And we have no idea who these people are and how they're going to use the data and under what security conditions that data is going to be protected from breaches. And so this is another really good reason why, even if you believed in the Common Core and even if you believed that the test scores would give you good information, which I don't believe they are, parents should opt out of this testing in order to protect their child's data from breaches and from disclosure to potentially irresponsible people who we don't know what they would do with it.
And I think the other thing is this. I wrote on my blog a little piece about this, about Spygate, and I wonder, how do we know that the students' names and their identities, that they terminate their interest in the student? Is there a memory of these students as they go on into the future? Will they be on a so-called no-fly list, like we've got to watch these students because they have the potential of breaching the protocol for testing in the future? Where does it end, and who's in charge of this?
I'd like to answer your question.
Yeah, so one of the things that the Obama administration did is they gave money and requirements to all states to create these student longitudinal data systems that are supposed to track your kids through life. And they're supposed to share data from all the different governmental agencies, including the health agencies, Child Protective Services, criminal justice, and gather all that information up and create these databases that are going to essentially track your child pre-K to the grave. And there are no particular restrictions on access to that data either. So we found out only after we filed a lawsuit over In Bloom that the state education department intended to outsource those data systems to the state archives, where they would be held in perpetuity with uncertain restrictions on access. So these databases are very, very dangerous as well. And this group called ALEC, which is a right-wing group that creates model legislation for state legislators around the country, has something called the Student Futures Act, in which they say that there should be committees formed in every state level appointed by the governor and other, I think the state education department, that should look at this data and steer students into appropriate colleges or careers based upon their data, which to me is a horrifying thought.
yes, chilling. So and this is much more than a test.
Ken, you have something you wanted to add?
Yes, there is. And what we're saying right now, and this is the most disturbing thing to me. I actually talked with Peggy Robertson over at the Apt-Out conference that we had about this. We have these kids, because we're adults, children have the same question. Where is all my stuff going? What it causes a distress. It's way beyond stress. In children and families, unlike anything that hasn't any of us, none of us, I should say, none of us has experienced this degree of stress about where is all my personal information going, blah, blah, blah. We never had high-stakes tests the way these are. At the same time, all of this additional stress and distress is occurring in children and families. Childhood suicide rates are up. This is a taboo subject. People don't even want to think about it. We may have people who are turning the station off right now. But the fact is, the numbers are there. The suicide rates are up, and we know how often childhood suicides are hidden as suicides by families out of a sense of shame. It's a child. What did we do wrong? And in spite of that, those numbers are going up. So from a child's point of view, whether that child is in third grade or high school, it doesn't matter. Their question of who's following me, what are they doing, what are they collecting on me, is causing a horrible distress and taking a terrible toll on kids all across the United States. And that, to me, is criminal.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. This is the tip of the iceberg. Every time I think, now we've got it, now we see the problems, it just gets worse. Because this is, we are tinkering with the lives of our most vulnerable citizens who have no vote and no seat at the policy table. And yet they're the ones being exploited. They've become the capital in our society to be exploited and used to turn a profit. And the worst thing about it is our governments keep handing out entrepreneur grants for more and more companies to enter into the field of exploitation of children, their private information and their data, and someday they're going to apply to a college and somebody's going to have some data that says, I noticed that in fourth grade they couldn't do long division, and therefore I don't think they're a good fit for my college. And that's the worst thing about it, I think, is this, you're right, suicide rates, if we don't speak for our children, nobody will, because they don't have a voice that can be heard.
You know, I have a question for Leonie right now.
Sure.
I have wondered about this. I was one of the people, yes, I believe we should have the Department of Justice and we should do civil rights complaints. Would you and NEP think of demanding a congressional investigation into Pearson? Because by having it a congressional
I'm still having trouble hearing you. Could you speak more into the mic or wherever you're speaking?
Okay, I'll do it again. Could we actually have, instead of merely a Department of Justice investigation, could we demand that the Congress start a congressional investigation of what Pearson is doing, multinational corporation, all of the connections? Because then the information would be public, it would be out there for the public to see, instead of the Department of Justice, which keeps their investigations secret while they're doing them. Can we do it?
A congressional
investigation? We've got about 5 minutes.
Yes, ask for a congressional investigation of Pearson and their financial doings and their connections with all of this Spygate and everything we're talking about right now. Is it a possibility?
We got 5 minutes left.
Would
I
MPE
don't
consider
know.
It?
I mean, I'm not sure. I have not yet found any smoking gun that says that anything Pearson has done is illegal. You know, they are a monopolistic company that has gained more and more control over our educational system with the active intervention and assistance of the federal government. We could ask for a congressional investigation, but I'm not clear on what the charges would be.
Okay, it would be based on the idea
in our education system up to now has happened with the encouragement of the U.S. Department of Education.
May I say something?
It's not necessarily even that secretive. It's not a conspiracy. It's far in the open.
Hey, this is Deb. I think right now the time is right. Because I think what we can start with is an investigation about how Arnie Duncan rewrote FERPA laws. And I think that would be worthy of a congressional investigation. And I think with the Republican-dominated Congress, regardless of your political affiliation, I think they would be willing to engage in that kind of investigation.
Okay, and Lee, only what I wanted to add to this is it's a matter of finances to so many of them. So as a result, yes. American tax dollars are going to a multinational company that pays no American mm-hmm. taxes. And what are they doing with it? That's what we can, because Congress loves to argue about money and then point fingers at either party, but at least it would make it public. What are they doing
Amen.
With American tax dollars being given to a multinational corporation who is controlling and making a fortune off of all of this personal information?
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I want to say let me
come in. We only have about 2 minutes left. So I want to wrap this up by posing a couple of questions myself. And one is, and this is to everyone, you won't have time to answer it, but also to the audience. My question is, have we become a generation and nation of sheep? In that there has not been a huge outcry of rage among our parents in the thousands into the millions over this. We have seemed to become quite acquiescent to government usurping our constitutional rights. And if that's the case, Bob, your question of a congressional investigation is very, very moot, because it is the Congress, the Senate, the President, and the courts that are either turning a blind eye or deaf ear from what is going on, that if we don't rise up in huge numbers, I'm talking about in the hundreds of thousands, millions, no, nothing is going to happen, and we are going to descend further into what I think maybe we would all agree with, is that America, especially since 9/11, has become the quintessential surveillance state on the planet. And what we see with Pearson, what we see with the smart balance, it's all very much conducive with us being a national surveillance state. And Lonnie, to you, I was going to say, this is exactly what you were fighting against when you went up against InBloom. And to me, this is InBloom with another name and another face. And my last comment, since my time is up, is Lonnie, I was going to introduce you by saying Godfrey Canada is still waiting for Superman. We have our Superwoman, and she's going to be on our show today. Didn't get a chance to do that because I screwed up, but that was my intro and my compliment to you, as you're also my hero. So everyone had you as their hero today. That was unanimous. We are out of time, but next week and for the next 4 weeks at least, we're going to be right back on this subject and all the tangential points that were made today. So hopefully people will come back and become part of the conversation. And also, today's guest, I will invite you back on individual shows and maybe even try to get this whole gang back together again, because we just touched the tip of the iceberg here. So I'm going to say goodbye, and to all my guests, thank you so very much. Many of you came on very short notice. And for the people who called in, we thank you as well. And hope everyone will have a great Sunday. And I'll say goodbye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance. I said, whoa!